Welcome to the Three Creeks Church Podcast. We're a church in Gahanna, Ohio that exists to help people find and follow God. We hope this message encourages you, challenges you, and helps you discover how much God really loves you.
Well, hey, good morning, Three Creeks. My name is Joel, and it looks like we've got a lot of new faces in the house. If you are here for a child dedication for a nephew or a niece or a grandchild, we just want to say what's up and welcome to Three Creeks. We are glad that you are here. If you're part of the Three Creeks family, from week to week, we're going to continue our series in the book of Mark. We've been going through the Gospel of Mark for the last 5 weeks, and today we are in chapter 6. We're going to be here for 16 weeks because there are 16 chapters in Mark, and for somebody like me, that just makes me feel good. I just like that. And I know that there are similar people in the crowd here with me today. Real quick, one point on the slice baby thing that is happening. I'm relatively new to Columbus, and I hear different things about what is the best pizza in Columbus. You know what I'm saying? I hear people say hound dogs. Am I right, Tom? That's right. I hear people saying Mike's late night slice. I hear people saying different things. And so what I'd like to do on Instagram this afternoon, me and John Scott, our other pastor here, we put out a little video. And we just said, hey, we want to know what you think the best pizza in Columbus is. And then I will take the burden upon myself to go try them. And John and I will circulate Columbus trying all of the best pizza in Columbus, and then maybe we'll get that for Slice Baby. So it kind of hangs in the balance. You could be getting some really good pizza for that. It also begs the question, as I kind of intro today's message, what is the most famous dinner in history? The most famous dinner party in history. I Googled it, and a lot of the same famous dinners were on different lists. The first one, almost on every list, was the Last Supper. It's a Bible story. Jesus, his disciples, he washed their feet. He introduced communion, bread and cup. And it was his meal with his closest friends on the night that he was betrayed and then was going to kill. The Last Supper was on a Thursday. Jesus was killed on a Friday. People think that's the most famous dinner in history. Another famous dinner that was on the list was, I know it's kind of morbid, the last dinner on the Titanic. I know, your jaws. Oh, ooh, he mentioned that. Yeah, I went there. This is a famous dinner. This is the actual picture of that. Leonardo DiCaprio was there, I think. But that actually is the menu. They did have mutton chops. And if you know what a mutton is, come and tell me afterwards, because I don't know what a mutton chop is. But the last dinner on the Titanic, and I just want to go on record and say that there was enough room on that door for Rose to invite Jack to also be safe with her. I just think there was a number of feet that were available for him to kind of climb on that door, but that's beside the point. Another one is this one here. This is Alexander Hamilton or Thomas Jefferson, one of the two. Call it the dinner table bargain with Alexander Hamilton, Thomas Jefferson, and James Madison. Nobody else was in the room where it happened. Thomas Jefferson arranged the meeting. He arranged the venue, the menu, the seating. And this is the meal, this is for real, that I didn't even mean to rhyme there. That was good. This is where Thomas Jefferson negotiated with Alexander Hamilton, gave Alexander Hamilton a lot of power over the financial structure of the United States. And in exchange, they essentially shipped the capital of the United States down to Washington, D.C., and those were the only three guys in the room. Kind of a crazy story in the history of our country. And the last one, I found this fascinating. In 1966, there was a man who was in charge of the Carnegie Foundation, which is a foundation that wants to educate children. He had children himself. And he was frustrated because his children loved watching TV, but at that point in time, it was a waste of time. And there was an executive named Joan Cooney at PBS who got an idea on how to educate kids through TV, through colorful monsters and catchy tunes called Sesame Street, and it was birthed at a dinner party in New York City in 1966. So you can't say that you came to church and didn't learn anything, right? You figured that out. Sesame Street, another famous dinner when it comes to the repercussions. These are famous dinner parties, but today, I want to throw this in front of you. I just want to say that the story that I'm going to talk about today in my opinion, is the most famous dinner in the history of the world. If you've got your Bibles, you can turn in them or turn them on and go to Mark chapter 6. If you don't have a Bible, we've got a whole stack of them back there. And on your way out today, you could grab one and it's yours to keep. That's for you. And here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to read Mark chapter 6, verse 30 through 44, 15 verses. And kind of the way that we've been going through this series is I'll read the whole story and then I'll go back through kind of one section at a time and paint a picture of what it would have been like to actually be there and see what God might want to say to us through this story. In verse 30, Mark chapter 6, the most famous dinner in history, the apostles, Jesus' close friends, returned to Jesus from their ministry tour and told him all they had done and taught. And Jesus said, "Let's go off by ourselves to a quiet place and rest a while." He said this because there were so many people coming and going that Jesus and his apostles didn't even have time to eat. So they left by boat for a quiet place where they could be alone. But many people recognized them and saw them leaving, and people from many towns ran ahead along the shore and got there ahead of them. Jesus saw the huge crowd as he stepped from the boat, and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So Jesus began teaching them many things. Later in the afternoon, his disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place. It's already getting late. Send the crowds away so that they can go to nearby farms and villages and buy something to eat." And Jesus said, "You feed them." "With what?" they asked. "We'd have to work for months to earn enough money to buy food for all these people." He asked, "How much bread do you have? Go and find out. How much bread do we have?" So they came back and reported, "We have 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. And Jesus told the disciples to have the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of 50 or 100. And Jesus took the 5 loaves and 2 fish, looked up toward heaven, and blessed them. Then, breaking the loaves into pieces, he kept giving the bread to the disciples so they could distribute it to the people. He also divided the fish for everybody to share. They all ate as much as they wanted. And afterwards, the disciples picked up 12 baskets of leftover bread and fish, a total of 5,000 men and their families were fed." So that's a miracle. Like, there's no way to not put that in the category of divine supernatural intervention. Like, this is a miracle. If I'm being honest with you, you know, other miracles of Jesus, you might be able to convince me that he tricked them. You know, I don't know, he found a blind guy and the guy acted blind, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, he could have, but this one, I just think this is a full-blown divine supernatural miracle. There is one group of people called the Religious Historical Society. In the 19th century, they're anti-supernatural. Miracles aren't possible. And so under attack is every narrative of miracles in the Bible. They need to come up with a logical way that Jesus, the devious magician, pulled it off. And so they took it upon themselves to interpret these in natural ways. Notice they don't deny that 5,000 people ate bread and ate fish, but they came up with another way to explain what happened. This is what they said, that Jesus, he had carefully prepared for this by devious means. He had filled a cave with large baskets of bread and a lot of fish. He got it there himself, apparently. Jesus had a flowing robe on that day, much like you would see a magician wearing, and he had loose sleeves. This is what they say. The disciples were hidden in the cave, and they formed this bucket brigade. They put Jesus on top of something and then shuffled one bag at a time of loaves and fishes up through his robe and out into his hands. That this wasn't a miracle. This was a hoax perpetrated by a fraudulent preacher. That is what they came up with. And to me, that's crazier than a miracle happening, right? I mean, you just think about this logically. Think about the scene here. 5,000 men. 5,000 men, meaning that there were probably 12 to 20,000 people there, if you include the women and the children. So we're talking 15,000 people. What is their attitude towards Jesus in general? They're sprinting down the coast trying to get ahead of him so that they can see what he's going to do. Jesus is not operating, you know, by himself very often. He doesn't even have time to eat. There's 15,000, there's 30,000 eyeballs on Jesus. So flowing robe Jesus, I just don't know if that's possible. You could maybe convince me, you could maybe convince me that he got everybody in on it by giving them something. I don't know. Make sure that the people don't know. I don't know. He could have made up the story, I guess. But the people that were there actually may have left this dinner relatively disappointed. Because when it says that there were 5,000 men going out there, that's important. The men weren't just able to run down the shore freely and leave their work and spend a whole day following Jesus without making means. The women and the children, maybe they could go with Jesus. The crowds that followed Jesus probably were mostly women and children, but this author wants to make sure you know that 5,000 men went. These people think that this is the beginning of Jesus's Messiah guerrilla warfare attack on Rome. You remember what happened the last couple weeks? Jesus is doing these little things, revealing that he is the Messiah that all these Jews have been looking for. They've been waiting for hundreds of years for someone to come and save them, and they think this is it. This is when Jesus is gonna start training the troops. All these people are not believers in Jesus. They just want to see what Jesus is going to do. And so they're not all on his side. This isn't some kind of cult following. He couldn't have convinced all of them of that. And every gospel writer, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, all of them write about this. The only other miracle that all four write about is the resurrection. That's kind of interesting. Like, all of these people wanted you to know that Jesus fed 5,000 people, that this really was a miracle. Let me go back through the story. One of my favorite things about this story is that no matter where you are on your spiritual journey, God has something to say to you in this story. As I studied this, as I read this, I pulled something out for the person who considers themselves a longtime Christ follower, who considers himself a leader in the church, a leader among Christians, somebody who wants to invest in other Christians. And I was able to pull something out for somebody in here who's maybe newer to their faith, just getting started, would say that you're a Christian but are unsure of how that works itself out in your life. And there's something in here for the person who's curious, for the person who's just checking things out, for the person who wants to know, is this really the real deal? There's something in here for you too. So no matter where you're at on your spiritual journey, I think there's something in here for you. Look at verse 30. It says, the apostles returned to Jesus from their ministry tour and told him all they had done and taught. If you were to scroll up or look up in your Bible, you would see at the beginning of chapter 6, Jesus actually sent the disciples out to go start preaching without him, and actually gave them authority to do some miracles, and people were healed and demons were cast out. And so the story that we're reading is actually the first thing that they get to do with Jesus when they get back. I don't know how long they were gone, but I imagine it was certainly a couple of weeks or months or maybe over a year. I don't know how long they were sent out. But when they come back, this is their first interaction with Jesus. And they said, they want to tell Jesus everything that happened. Look what Jesus says. Let's go off by ourselves to a quiet place and rest a while. He said this because there were so many people coming and going that Jesus and his apostles didn't even have time to eat. So they left by boat for a quiet place where they could be alone. This is the first thing that Jesus initiates. He goes, let's go on vacation. Let's get out of Dodge. Let's get out of here for a minute. Let's just go stop. The ministry can just be put on pause just for a second. Let's get away from here and reflect. Let's rest. Let's go sit by the lake. You bring your hammocks. We'll tell stories. And I don't know about you, but if you're in any type of ministry role or you're a community group leader or you're leading a Bible study, that almost seems sinful for a minute. Wait. Stop for a week? Rest? And I think the message that Jesus is sending to his disciples very early on in their ministry, all these guys, these 12 guys, this was their first go at it. They went out, they started to preach, they came back. for the next, 15, 20, 30 years, these guys are going to do a lot of these. They're going to go out and they're going to do ministry to people. What's the first thing Jesus says when they come back? He goes, let's get out of town. Let's take a break and let's rest in the sovereignty of God for a minute. So Christian leader, this one's for you. Don't miss this. In the middle of the busyness and the business, we can't forget to get away with Jesus by ourselves. We can't forget to get away with Jesus by ourselves. And the greater the demands of ministry, the greater our need for getting away with Jesus. When things speed up, it's easy to go and spend less time with Jesus. When I was starting this journey into being a pastor, I wanted to surround myself with people who had done it a lot longer and better than I had. And so I got around this guy. His name was Chuck. I said, Chuck, you've been a pastor for 30 years. I need one nugget of wisdom. What is the one thing you would pass on to me as I'm just getting started? And he said, Joel, that's easy for me. I'll pass this one on to you. He said, Joel, do not let the pulpit drive you to Jesus. Let Jesus drive you to the pulpit. In other words, don't just spend time with God because you've got to have something to feed the people on Sunday. Go be with God. Go be with Jesus on your own, and then it will spill over. And I can't say that I've aced that every single week, but that's my goal. My goal is to go and spend so much time with Jesus that I have too much to say, that I have too much to share. And there's parts of my relationship with God that you know nothing about because it's secret and it's mine and it's with God. And so if you would consider yourself someone who goes, I want to be a Christian leader. I want to pour into other people. I would give you the same advice that Chuck gave me. Don't let that ministry or that Bible study drive you to go spend time with God. But go spend time with God and let that drive you to want to do more of that kind of ministry. We can't just cram it in at the end, right? Oh, shoot, it's tomorrow morning. That happens from time to time, but the idea is that we would have a lifestyle where we spend so much time with God that it just kind of seeps out of us. This is what Jesus wants these disciples to know. It's the first thing he wants them to know. Let's get away to a quiet place. So they head off into a boat. They're sailing down the shore. Look what happens in verse 33. Many people recognized them and saw them leaving, and people from many towns ran ahead along the shore and got ahead of them. So the vacation is about to be ruined. And the disciples, I imagine, are a little irritated. And the way that the northern part of the Sea of Galilee works, Jesus and his disciples weren't sailing necessarily across to the other side. But it seems as though they're sailing up the shore. And then thousands of people are running along the shore of Galilee going, when are these guys going to stop? And finally, Jesus looks up. And it says that Jesus was, not annoyed. No, not inconvenienced, not frustrated. It says Jesus in verse 34 saw all of them and he had compassion on them. He had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd, and he began teaching them many things. The level of compassion that Jesus has, for those of you that like it when I do this, there's a Greek word here that in the original text called I'm going to totally mess this up, but splagnizitai. I can't imagine it's pronounced like that, but that's how it's spelled. Splagnizitai. It's a splagnizitai level of compassion, and it's attributed to nobody else in the entire New Testament. Only Jesus has that level of compassion. And when he comes onto the shore, there's 5,000 men, so 15,000 people, apparently all able to hear what he's saying because he begins teaching them. It's some kind of outdoor amphitheater. And they're sitting and listening to Jesus. And verse 35, late in the afternoon, his disciples came to him and said, we are in a remote place and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to nearby farms and villages and buy something to eat. See, even Jesus gets carried away from time to time when he's preaching. He's a little long-winded in this scenario. You know, like when you miss church and go to the podcast and it's like, 43 minutes. Ooh, I don't know if I can get through this whole thing. This is me trying to be like Jesus, okay? I'm picturing Peter in the back. Hey, it's getting late. wrap it up. One of the disciples probably had to go up and just kind of nudge Jesus on the shoulder. It's getting late. We probably should have these guys be able to go get something to eat. Let's have him buy something to eat. Jesus looks back at whoever came up to him and says, you feed them. And at first, I'm like, the disciples got to be, what are you talking about? How could I feed them? We don't have any food to feed them. It's going to take me to, I'm going to have to work 8 months to come up with enough money to feed all of these people. They go, with what? We'd have to work for months to earn enough money to buy food for all these people. 8 months' wages is another translation of work for months. It emphasizes, once again, the size of the crowd. And if you'll notice, how do the disciples respond? They go, this is an unreasonable request. And the disciples exclaim what they lack. We don't have 8 months' wages. We don't have enough food to feed all of these people. But notice what Jesus asks them. He says, how much bread do you have? Not how much bread do you think we're going to need. How much bread do you have? What are we already working with here? What do we have to offer so far? Like, what have I already given you? Go and find out what we have given you. I think a lot of times, and this is that little nugget, if you will, for the person who is a Christian, but maybe newer to it, or still figuring out kind of where you fit in all of this, perhaps what prevents us from serving God and being a blessing to other people is we focus more on what we don't have than what God has already given to us. We say things like, well, I'm not good at speaking. Oh, I can't sing or play an instrument, and I don't like kids. Right? Or I'm single, so it's hard for, well, I'm married with kids, so it's, and we come up with the reasons why we can't do what God might want us to do rather than focusing on what we already have, the gifting that is already in us. One of my favorite things about Three Creeks Church is the different ways that people in this church have been able to use what they love. People are walking their dogs together at parks in this church. Last night, people got together with Aaron Davis for the Dudes and Brews night. There was a game night on Tuesday. People have been able to go, man, how has God made me? How has God gifted me? What interests do I have, and how can I use that in our church? One of my favorite examples recently, there's a new girl in our church named Chloe. Chloe is an editor. She never makes a mistake, grammar-wise. She's like in the top 0.3% or something. I don't know. You got to be a pretty special person. So if you see anything that we've printed, then we didn't run that by Chloe if there was a mistake. Because she's an editor, and when I talked with her, I said, hey, would you ever consider helping out our church with that? She said, yes, of course, absolutely. And so from time to time, we give her these pieces that we're going to print, and she combs through them. And it's amazing how many things she finds on the things that I wrote. And just makes them better. Another person that I love in this church, his name's Jason. And Jason is a master woodworker. And so from time to time, we'll just say, dude, can you make us some Jesse Tree wood packets? Or hey, can you make a table for the Christmas party? Or hey, can you make, remember those black boards we had at Goshen Lane? Like Jason made all of those on his own time because this is a skill that he has. And so Jason isn't going, well, I'm not good at public speaking. He goes, I can use a sieve, is that what it's called? What's it?
A saw.
I love that. I love that in this church, people that are good at different things can use them for the glory of God. And so I guess my thought to you would be, you know, don't focus on what God didn't give you. God made you exactly like he wanted to. He didn't make a mistake. He gave you the interests and the giftings that he wanted you to have. And so how can you use that to honor God by blessing people? The question I wrote down is, what has God already given you that you can use to honor God by blessing people? Jesus didn't focus on what they lacked. He focused on what they already have. So they come back and they report, we have 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. The account in the book of John says that they found one boy who had all five loaves and two fish. Not sure who he was keeping that for. I don't know if the boy even intended to be there. Perhaps he was walking by, taking food back to his family. I don't know. But he gave his food to the disciples, so they bring it to Jesus. Five loaves, two fish, and Jesus told the disciples to have the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of 50 or 100. And as a dad, I read that verse, as somebody who cares about my lawn, I read that verse. Do you see those two words? The green grass. They sit down in groups on the green grass. Like, I'm to the level of dadness, like home ownershipness, where when it rains, I just put my hands in my pockets and I look outside and go, we needed this. You know? Thank you, Aiken. He sits them all down in groups of 50, in groups of 100, and then Jesus prays. He prays. He looks towards heaven and prays. In verse 41, then the breaking the loaves into pieces, he kept giving the bread to the disciples so they could distribute it to the people. He also divided the fish for everybody to share. And this is the verse I'm going to camp on for the rest of the time together. They all ate as much as they wanted. They all had as much as they wanted. And afterwards, the disciples picked up 12 baskets of leftover bread and fish. A total of 5,000 men and their families were fed. That's a miracle. That is a miracle that was able to happen. That verse there, verse 42, they all ate as much as they wanted. They all ate. This is the message to the person that is curious, that is checking things out, that is unsure if God or church or Jesus is your thing. Just notice that they all ate, and then think about the people in that crowd. Think about the people in that crowd and the mistakes that those people had made in their life and the habits that they had formed in their life that they weren't proud of. I mean, just the nationalities, the color of skin, the age, the gender, the socioeconomical class that they were in, their education, how much money they made. Just think of the diversity among 15,000 people at least. And the story, it says that they all ate, that he gave all of them exactly what they needed. He satisfied every single one of them. In Jewish culture at the time, there were so many laws, but there were even more laws over eating than any other thing. You had to prepare the food in a proper way. You had to serve it in a proper way. It was only allowed to be eaten by the proper kind of people. You couldn't co-mingle with people that weren't like you. There were just countless laws. And Jesus, on the side of a hill, just throws the laws out of the window and says, this is for everybody. Everybody can eat. I'm here to satisfy everybody. There were definitely Jews there, and there were definitely Gentiles there. Men, women, children, from everywhere, with every kind of background. And Jesus just pitches this hierarchical attitude out the window and says, I literally came to satisfy the soul of every person that is here. I came for everybody. I want to show you one more. Let me show you one more thing that I found as I read about this story that kind of makes that last point, it dries the cement on that last point. Let me start with this way. Two chapters later in the book of Mark, if you're interested, go read it sometime this week. In Mark chapter 8. Jesus goes and feeds 4,000 people. Again, similar kind of situation, couple loaves of bread, couple fish, and he does a miracle again, and he feeds 4,000 people at another time in Mark chapter 8. So, and in that story, there are seven baskets of bread left over at the end. Do y'all remember how many baskets of bread were left over after the 5,000? There were 12, right? So this is kind of crazy. In between the two, Jesus is going back and forth on the lake. He's going to the Gentile side, the rough part of town for a little bit, comes over the Jew side again, goes over. And then when he goes over there, they kind of kick him out a little bit, and they come over here, and the Pharisees get mad at him. So he's just kind of bopping back and forth. And then they're on the boat. Jesus and his disciples are on the boat again. They're traveling across again. And the disciples actually get in a fight about bread on the boat, if you can imagine that. Christians fought. Crazy. The disciples get in a fight. They don't have enough bread on the boat to eat. So Peter's like, James, you were supposed to bring the bread. And James's like, I thought John was bringing it. And they get in a fight about bread. And Jesus, in Mark chapter 8, He stops the fight, and this is what he says to those guys. He goes, don't you know or understand even yet, disciples? Are your hearts too hard to take it in? You've got eyes. Can't you see? You have ears. Can't you hear? Jesus is frustrated that these guys can't get it yet. In verse 19, in Mark 8, when I fed the 5,000 with five loaves of bread, how many baskets of leftovers did you pick up afterwards? 12, they said. And when I fed the 4,000 with the seven loaves, how many large baskets of leftovers did you pick up? 7, they said. And Jesus says, don't you understand yet? Don't you understand? I read it and thought, nope, no idea. Really have no idea what 12 and 7 means. I read about it. I think it's consistent with the whole of Scripture, so I want to share it with you. When Jesus fed the 5,000, he was in the good part of town. He was on the Jewish side of the lake. He was with the people that thought that they deserved to be with God. He was with the religious people. And there were 12 baskets left over, representing the 12 tribes of Israel. And Jesus said, I came so that all 12 tribes of Israel would have enough of me to satisfy the need in their souls. When he fed the 4,000 people, he was on the other side of the lake. He was in the Greek area, in the Decapolis, where what Jews thought were the dirty people, the unreligious people, the people that didn't deserve to be with God. And there were 7 over there. If you go back to the Old Testament, when all this land and who lives where was established, this is what happened. God said to Moses, Moses, when you take the Jews into the good side of the land, I'm going to give you the power to purge it from people that currently live there. And he lists 7 different nations that were expelled at that point from this land that God had for him. And those 7 groups, those 7 nations of people, the Amorites, you can read about it. I'll mess it up if I try to get them all. But there's 7 of them. Where'd they move? They moved to the other side of the lake. And they inhabited all these other towns. And so he came and he said, and there were 7 left over there, meaning, hey, disciples, yes, not only did I come for the Jews, and I know that you expect me to do that, but I also came to satisfy the souls of every person that lives over there too. I'm not discriminating. I'm not picking and choosing who I'm giving bread to. I came so that every person could have me and to have me satisfy their soul. That's just cool to me. And if you picture the scene, the disciples, Jesus hands it out to them, and they've got these baskets, and they're carrying it around. It's like, I don't know if you've ever been to Springfield, Missouri, but they've got this cafe called Lambert's Cafe, and they throw rolls at people, right? I just imagine the disciples, like, bread, who wants one? They're just chucking out fish and bread to people. But in that moment, if you're sitting there and Jesus and the disciples are offering this to you, you got to realize, like, you don't get satisfied unless you raise your hand and say, I need something, I'm hungry, I am in need, I'm not okay as is, I will not last as is. And so please give me bread. I will take it and I will eat it and it will satisfy me. You see, there's this part of the story that you got to raise your hand and say, I'm hungry too. Like, I need something to satisfy me. This offer of Jesus doesn't just cover over every person, no matter what. There was a reception, there's a receiving, there's a yes, I need that part. And so if you're curious and you're checking things out, that the step for you from this story is for you to raise your hand and go, yeah, like I will admit that my life isn't full right now and I am in need and Jesus can fill that need for me. That's what he meant. When Mark wrote, they all ate, he wanted you to know that that invitation was for every single person on that hill. We're going to close this service like we have the other ones in this series. I'm going to give you 2 minutes. I'm going to ask you 3 questions. And based on whether you would put yourself in, you know, category 1, 2, or 3, there's kind of a question that comes at you. Maybe 2 questions will come and kind of hit you where you're at. Let me read them for you. To the leader, the question is, are you getting away enough with Jesus? Is your soul full to the point where it overflows and is allowing you to pour into other people? Number 2, what has God already given you that you can use to honor God by blessing people? What did God make you great at? He did not make a mistake. How might you use that to bless people and honor God in doing that? And to the curious, do you understand that Jesus came for you through this story? Have you received the life that Jesus offers? Have you raised your hand and said, I am in need and I want what Jesus gives me? We're gonna turn the lights down. The band's gonna come up. We're gonna sing one more song in a minute. But before we do that, take 2 minutes and think about this and let this be a special time in the service for you.
Thanks for listening to the Three Creeks Church podcast. To find out more about our church, to give online, or to attend a service, visit threecreekschurch.com. Thank you.